Well, the combination of the recent four-year drought in California, along with climate change, provided the state with an important test of the state's ability to manage severe water scarcity. Joining us this morning to talk about the lessons learned is Jeffrey Mount, a senior fellow at the Public Policy Institute of California, and one of the authors of some recommendations for future drought events. Jeffrey Mount, good morning, and welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's good to have you here. Tell us what we learned in broad strokes from that drought episode over that four-year period.
Well, it turns out drought was probably 5 years, depending on how you look at it. But from the 2012 to 2016, that water year, we had what 3 years of those the driest on record, consecutive years. And then, of course, what we had was a, by all measures, and everybody in the Jefferson Public Radio listening audience knows it was also the hottest that we had ever recorded. And that combination of dryness and heat exacerbated all sort of drought problems that we developed. Now, if you're interested in managing drought, the silver lining was that it revealed all our weaknesses in how we manage drought. It also revealed all our strengths. And real quickly, what we learned is that droughts are very powerful as a great motivator, and in fact, the drought that many of your listeners will remember from 87 to 92 scared the heck out of the urban areas because they came very, very close to real rationing, and they made major investments, and it turns out they paid off in this. You cannot point to an economic impact of that drought in California because most of our economy comes from the urban areas, and they managed the water pretty well. I mean, there were some mistakes. Agriculture was hit the hardest by far. I mean, they lost half their surface water during this drought, and then, as we know, they went to the well, and with extensive groundwater pumping, which is a problem that we've got to fix sometime over the next 20 years. There also were some rural communities, the disadvantaged communities that we know of, particularly in the Central Valley farm areas and foothills, Sierras, and some rural communities in your neighborhood that really suffered during this drought because we were not prepared for it. And then finally, all of our problems that we have on trying to balance the ecosystem needs, whether it's wetlands or whether it's rivers themselves, against water use for economic water use, those were really exploded during this drought because that is where the tensions are the highest, is during a drought. So we learned some lessons. We've got strengths and weaknesses, and the report that I and 29 other authors released a few weeks ago took a hard look at this and used that lessons learned to kind of guide a series of recommendations for what we should do in the future, because the drought we just had is a dry run for a dry future. Mm-hmm. That's what the future looks like.
And are we expecting that climate change will be the new normal and impact
I love the phrase new normal. If it's new, it's not normal, right?
So it'll that's be true.
It'll be the new condition. Yeah. And so we did a lot of work. We did a lot of technical work on trying to look at droughts of the future. We incorporated a lot of existing modeling work and did a bunch of our own, led by Paul Ulrich at UC Davis, who did a really terrific job of looking what the drought of the mid-century would look like. And we actually took the drought of 2012 to 2016 and exported it to 2040 to 2050 in that part of a time frame, which is the reason we did that is that most of the time people just talk about 2100, which is abstract to most of us. But if you talk about 2040, that's when we have to bring all our groundwater basins into sustainable management, all the big infrastructure projects people are talking about, like the Delta tunnels for the governor, those would all be coming online about 2040. So that's why we looked at that. And what we saw is those conditions that we just had in the drought will be the kind of average drought condition that we'll have about that time. So that's what we should plan for.
We're speaking with Jeffrey Mount, a senior fellow at the Public Policy Institute of California. You can join our conversation this morning by calling 800-838-3760 or emailing us at jx@jeffnet.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Jeff Exchange. Well, you came up with some recommended reforms, and if we want to take those in order, the first reform that you suggested was that we plan ahead. What kind of planning do we need to do?
Yeah, so if there's one thing we really learned out of the drought is that we spend most of our time responding to drought rather than preparing for it. The exception to that is principally in the urban areas, particularly the San Francisco Bay Area and Southern California, where they did extensive planning and prepared for the drought and actually did all right. But for agriculture, even under the worst-case scenarios, we're still going to be a major agricultural powerhouse in the future, but we need to do a whole lot better planning for water supply, principally because we rely so heavily on groundwater and we're unsustainably managing groundwater. So we need the plan there. And then on the other planning side, what we're doing on ecosystem management isn't working. And one of the things that isn't working is we don't plan ahead. The last drought showed us that we just simply react. That makes it hard to actually manage it in a fair and transparent way. So our first recommendation was plan for it. We know it's coming. As if there's nothing else that is more certain in California, it's drought. And we really need to make some major investments in planning for them. And that was our first recommendation.
Is cooperation a problem between different entities? And not because there's any malicious intent, it's just you have all these different infrastructures that are trying to run their own particular area.
This is a really great point. It turns out something is happening. You know it. You just don't exactly know the details of it yet, and I can tell you what's happening. Now, most of your listeners in your area are disconnected from what we're calling, in our report, the grid. And the grid is this interconnected water supply management and flood control, but mostly water supply management system that stretches all the way from Northern California to San Diego and actually includes the western slope of the Rocky Mountains as with water that comes down the Colorado River. What we're seeing more and more is the use of this as a grid in the same way you have as an electrical grid. We think actually beefing that up and using this as a grid and transferring water from low-value uses to high-value uses during times of scarcity is a way to reduce the economic and social impacts of drought. So you're right. What we're now seeing is, what is the regionalization of water management rather than I'm just going to manage my water, you all leave me alone.
Mm. Well, this goes to the second reform you talk about, upgrading the water grid. What kind of steps is it going to take to modernize an entire water grid?
Yeah. Okay. Well, first of all, you need a plan. And this goes back to our original recommendations. You got to have a plan. And as the next governor comes in, this would be a good thing for this governor to do is sit down and take a comprehensive look at this grid. We have 1,440 dams in California, to give you an example, and thousands of miles of aqueducts and canals. And this should be operated more like a grid, like an electrical grid, although obviously there's a big difference between electrons and water molecules, but more grid-like approach. Well, the first thing, step one, that we recommended is, what's the condition of your grid? Oroville Dam was, I hate the phrase wake-up call, we were all awake. It was Oroville Dam really highlighted the need to take a hard look at the condition of our existing infrastructure.
Yes.
And that's $1 billion accident, which was really a result of mistakes that were made in the past. So we got to take a hard look at that. And then the second is to begin to modernize operations, and that's to integrate these operations over a large area. Again, operating it more as a grid and rather than individual fiefdoms of water supply. So, and by the way, that's all happening. I mean, all these utilities, they're connecting up to each other. They're getting cooperative agreements to store groundwater. This is what's happening as we speak. It just could be helped along.
I know that it's not necessarily directly related to the drought, but of course up here we've had to deal with the Carr Fire this year.
Oh, yeah.
Is that something else in terms of fire suppression that could benefit from an upgrade to the water grid?
So the fire is not disconnected from drought, of course. I mean, the drought played a major role, even in the Carr Fire, even though it's been a wet period after that, because the drought, as you know, during 2012 to 2016, killed a lot of vegetation. And then in 2017, we had a wet year, which created a whole bunch of fine fuels. This is part of the crazy climate swings that we identify in the report. So it's not unrelated. I mean, that weather that drives, or that climate that drives, is related to that. But there's also direct benefits to water supply from better management of our forest, for example. There is the yield associated with better management of the forest is usually overstated, but it is important. But the big impact is water quality. And so when this erosion from these fires goes into these reservoirs or into these rivers, they have major water quality and storage impacts. So there's a reason to manage both simultaneously as best you can.
Your third reform that you speak about is updating the water allocation rules. Explain what that means.
We wrote, the way we allocate water stretches all the way back to 1913, and actually it's in English common law before that. We have a system of water rights management which is creaky and antique. It's not very nimble. It is, and during times of drought, it just can't respond fairly. And we did a long report on this a year ago at PPIC, and actually a year before that, we took a hard look at how it's managed. We need better water allocation rules. That's the first thing. So we need to reform the water rights system in ways that make it more efficient and fair and transparent, which is extremely important. We also argue in that you need this thorny issue of trying to balance water for the environment and economic uses. We suggest you really need to rethink that, the way you do it. In fact, we've actually proposed that the environment be given a water budget and allowed to manage a water budget like a water right, which is pretty radical new stuff, but they've been doing it that way in Australia for many years and have shown success with it. So what we need to do is look at the way we allocate water and to do it more efficiently and fairly, and I really want to stress more transparently so people understand it.
In the Western United States, going way back to the 19th century, there's certainly been water allocation rules for individual farmers. Is this just looking at it in a much bigger context?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, we strongly suggest and have in numerous reports at PPIC over the years that one way to sort of soften the blow of water scarcity is to promote, well, two things to promote, but promote that's more trading. To make it easier for people to trade water, and that trading of water, again, reduces the economic and social impacts of shortage. I mean, I think that's actually really important. The other thing is that the way our laws are currently set up or administered, because it's both, it makes it darn hard for people to respond nimbly to something as simple as a wet period in the winter, for the storms come along when you want to try and put as much water as you can back in the ground. Mm-hmm. It turns out it's damn hard to do. Partly the infrastructure, this is part of upgrading the infrastructure to make it so you can move water to those places you can recharge it. And then the whole permitting, which takes so long to get done, you can't possibly respond to a storm. So there's where we need some reform, is make it easier to push more water into the ground during wet periods.
We're speaking with Jeffrey Mount, a senior fellow with the Public Policy Institute of California. You can join the conversation this morning if you have a question about water usage in California, 800-838-3760, or you can email us at jx@jeffnet.org. You talk about these sort of complicated and antiquated laws that are out there on the books. Has that created a process where to do the upgrades to the infrastructure, the permitting is just really slow, or is it being sped up any with some of the lessons learned from the drought?
You know, I get this question all the time. Does this require wholesale new legislation to make it work better, or can we work within the existing legislation that we have? And our attitude on this, and I'm a geologist, but I've got, the co-authors have got some of the most distinguished names in water in California on the legal side on this report. They continuously tell me that we do not take full advantage of the flexibility that our laws currently have, that we're not taught to upgrade the infrastructure, to operate it better, to promote trading, to promote groundwater recharge, may not require new legislation. You may be able to achieve all of this within the existing laws. So I think that that there's a lesson there, and for those who get involved in water, is that generally government is very conservative in the sense that they don't want to take risks, and so they want to go to the letter of the law, which will get them in the least amount of trouble. But what we need now is some risk-taking on the part of government to try and make this happen.
Your fourth reform that we wanted to talk about this morning is finding the money, and I guess that could include anything from bonds to taxes. Are Californians more open-minded about that, especially in light of the recent drought?
So if you look at the polling that we've done at the Public Policy Institute of California, at the top of everybody's list on environmental concerns remains water. the drought had a major impact on perceptions about water and water scarcity in the future. That is an opportunity because we have made it very difficult in California to collect money to achieve water management objectives. The exception to that is the traditional ratepayer-based approach, which you know when you get your water bill, you pay your water bill, and that goes toward managing your water supply. That is, in fact, 85% of the expenditures. We spend roughly $30 billion a year on water. 85% of those expenditures are coming from just ratepayers. So one of the things that we suggest is to begin to look at it that way. That's a way of spreading the pain as broadly as possible. But we need to be able to find a way to fund what we're calling fiscal orphans, that they have no easy way to pay for them, and that's going to be things like flood control. That's a classic example. Upgrading portions of the grid may require broader bases of ratepayers. That would be helpful too. And then we also have the issue of environmental management. So all of these don't have a regular source of money that can go ahead and fund those activities. We need to rethink how we do that. Having said that, Californians are very generous with bonds, and we've had an extraordinary amount of bonds, I mean billions of dollars worth of bonds come forward in the last decade, and we have one on the ballot this fall, another one, Proposition 3, on the ballot this fall. There may come a time where we get bond fatigue, and Californians stop doing that. We need to think carefully about that. But for now, bonds are really used. Our recommendation is to use bonds only for projects that have clear public benefit. You know, that is where the benefits are broad rather than just individual economic benefit. And then use ratepayers to cover the rest.
We only have about 30 seconds left or so, but I wanted you to comment on how this would play out in the extreme northern part of California where we have so many rural communities, small communities in the area.
Can I tell you, I think it plays out better there because you have small communities. I look at what's going on in the Scott River and the Shasta River, for example, and in those areas. When those communities decide to cooperate, things go well. When they don't cooperate, things tend to go badly. So one of the things we're promoting in this and everywhere else is the notion of negotiated solutions to these problems. So the more people can negotiate and work within those small communities at the individual watersheds scale, I think they're going to see success in the long run.
We've been speaking this morning with Jeffrey Mount, a senior fellow at the Public Policy Institute of California and one of the authors of some recommendations for future drought events that we might experience across all of California, but in the north here as well. Jeffrey Mount, thanks for visiting with us this morning.
No problem. Thank you.